Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 616. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamita. What is up, good sir?
Not a heck of a lot, Kevin. How about yourself?
The holidays are coming around, and that was the topic du jour before joining this show in progress here. And the holidays are looking up for the both of us. Is the shorthand for that. So we will move along to at least some of the positivity in the wrestling world of the WWE, at least. And head on over to SmackDown, as usual, for our entertainment. When I saw that Carmella and Sasha Banks were headlining the show, I figured some shenanigans would happen, and I guess I'm not surprised by what ended up happening in the main event.
I'm not necessarily surprised we didn't get a clean finish when there's the rematches was announced beforehand. But I am definitely impressed with the way SmackDown handled building up Carmella as a viable challenger in a single night. She definitely started off as something of a weak challenger, but they really spent all of SmackDown building up her and her issue with Sasha. From the beginning of the show to the end of the show, so I really feel like that whole thing was a win right there. It really shows the difference between SmackDown and Raw, even though I'm not sure exactly what the difference is between SmackDown and Raw, other than the lack of a third hour. Supposedly the same people are in charge, so I have no idea why these two shows are so diametrically opposed from each other in their ability to set their goals and go about achieving them, but they are.
Yeah, it has been that way for a while now, too. Like, I think that's, like, the it was one thing when you're like, oh, well, we know that there's a different head guy over here, and there's a different head guy over there, and, whatever the names were, at least you could kind of figure out the personalities to the shows. But, this has been really one unified vision for quite a while, whether it's Paul Heyman or it's been Bruce Pritchard for a while. Hasn't it? I mean, has it been a year since he's been back, like, fully in charge, at least, at this juncture?
Bruce, I know, I think he was back in sometime maybe after WrestleMania 35 or around that time. They tried out the Bischoff-Heyman regimes thing. Bischoff washed out really quickly. Heyman was taken off of control of Raw. So SmackDown's basically been in Bruce Pritchard's control for well over a year then.
Okay.
And then Heyman was removed from Raw, I believe, sometime maybe summer or a little before. But, yeah, does not feel like the same touch has been given to Raw as SmackDown. Is this ability to you've got this match that really didn't have a lot of heat to it, and you then just poured gasoline over it all night long and got themselves to a point where I don't know if I want to necessarily say an anticipated match, but it's not dragging the show down. It doesn't feel like Sasha's wasting her time at this point. One of their goals coming out of SmackDown was to make Carmella a viable challenger for at least this coming pay-per-view, and they accomplished it.
Carmella has the resume, but I think we've talked about it. And she started to wrestle better as she was champion. I always felt like she was giving it a little too early, but then she really grew into it, and for whatever reason, like, it was, I feel like it's been kind of strange that they've hidden her since then. Like, it seemed like the more she became viable in the ring, like, she ends up doing all the stuff with R-Truth, which was entertaining as all hell, but trying to get her to be taken seriously again after, you know, probably having what you would call, you know, definitely a heel run and a, like, a weak, you know, a cowardly heel run as champion, like, didn't really do anything for her, and you weren't gonna really rehab your image with R-Truth, at least in that department, and Carmella's really needed an edge to be taken seriously again, and they, as you pointed out, they really followed through and did that throughout this show. Because they really, like, it was kind of weird, like, they brought her back, and she was getting these segments, and then I felt like they dropped off for a little bit. And even during this feud, it felt like they had stopped paying attention to it for a moment. And it hurt Carmella more than it hurt Sasha. So yeah, it's kind of nice to see them really go all in on it. Because, I mean, I really don't expect Carmella to win the championship at TLC. But it never hurts to have her be taken more seriously so that you have more top heels around to work with some of the other women.
No, there's absolutely nothing wrong with it. It's good to have. Yeah, they put a decent amount of time into the reintroducing Carmella vignettes, and, you know, decided to put her right against Sasha. As you mentioned, as we've said, it felt like they weren't featuring her or, you know, really taking this match very seriously until last Friday, which when they, you know, did the opening's contract signing segment, which was good, and then the match itself was actually very good. It's one of Carmella's better in-ring outings, and followed up by, you know, a finish that really allowed her to show a mean streak, where she really, you know, was, you know, and the show ending with her on top.
Yeah, so that was definitely one of the better parts of SmackDown. One part that was both good and bad. It was one of those. It was so bad. No, it's not even so bad. It's good. Dolph Ziggler and Robert Roode being a tag team is something that, whew, man, it is really hard to get behind in any way, shape, or form, and to use them as credible challengers to the Street Profits, who continue to be entertaining, but oof, this is just not a good feud to be in my opinion.
No, it really isn't. Yeah, I've never been sold. I guess Ziggler and Roode got together. They've actually been together quite, you know, I know Roode was off television for a long time, and, you know, stuck up in Canada, but, you know, it feels like they've actually been a team for quite a long time, you know, starting on Raw last year. SmackDown last year, wasn't it? Or, it was both, didn't they? Didn't they get moved? Yeah, I think they got moved around like twice, didn't they?
How long they've been together and apart and then back together again would probably surprise me.
Yeah.
Like, whatever that time period is. It's longer than I probably... Like, I feel like 2 years is probably too much, but...
No. It's been probably close to a year and a half.
Okay.
Probably?
That sounds somewhat reasonable. But yeah, they've kind of been together as a team, and they haven't done much as a team. And the fact that they are calling themselves Aces, Oh man, and I about fell over laughing too when Dolph Ziggler called Robert Roode big guy. I'm like, is he being serious right now? And he seemed like he was being serious, and I was very confused because Robert Roode is all of an inch taller than Dolph Ziggler.
Yeah, no, their whole act together, Robert Roode has never been funny. So he's not the guy who's going to be doing, banter. Dolph Ziggler, of course, thinks he's hilarious. Our own Jeremy Mays has actually paid to see Dolph Ziggler stand up live in a decision that is absolutely baffling to me. I don't want to say anything beyond that. It's just, that's his own joke.
yeah, well, and I feel like he likes the material, so I will at least say that from what I remember. The material that he does use on TV is like that does not make me want to go see him, but I mean, it's also one of those things that if he was being legitimately funny, it would probably not look good for his character.
Yeah, it's but it's just they're not a good team together. Dolph is
Oh.
obviously just going through the motions for the paycheck. And on some level, I certainly don't blame him at this point. But it's not good for the Street Profits. And of course, WWE has to do this the feuds. They couldn't just, challenge them. They had to beat them multiple times
Oh.
in non-title matches and these singles matches. Street Profits were on a good run of not losing until they ran into Ziggler and Rude here. It's really silly how WWE does things. I mean, this endless barrage of non-title matches where the champions lose was just never in their DNA. Really, almost to like probably the 2000s, 2010s maybe. It just,
Well, when you mentioned that, I'm like, how long has this practice? Like, I guess I take that practice for granted at this point.
yeah. I mean, we know Stone Cold Steve Austin wasn't going to be doing that because, as we saw later, he would have just left. Hulk Hogan wasn't taking that crap. I guess it's probably more of a product of the Cena era and the era a little before that, maybe. Maybe Cena didn't lose. It's the undermining of the undercard championships, really.
Yeah,
It's
it's.
lazy. It's lazy creative. I mean,
Yeah.
it's not that they haven't done it for the main championships, but it's definitely the lazy creative that the undercard championships get.
Yeah, I think that's a good distinction to lay down. They are not as lazy with the championships that they really care about. And that's usually both of the men's titles and I mean, we already kind of talked about how much we're liking Sasha and Carmella, so and usually the ladies' stories storylines, at least the top two, are usually pretty good. One build up that I have been enjoying for a mid-card championship that has not involved the champion losing has been Sami Zayn and Big E.
Yeah, no, that's been pretty good so far. I like their interactions with each other. Big E is definitely someone well worth investing in. I do think that winning the if he's not going to be Universal Champion anytime soon, certainly having him be a dominant Intercontinental Champion as time goes on will do nothing but help for him. Be interesting if they are looking at, because since we have absolutely no idea where things are really headed towards WrestleMania and who's going to win the Royal Rumble, who's going to win the Royal Rumble. It'll be interesting to see if Big E could potentially get that nod. What they do with this whole Intercontinental title scenario, but that's just talking, complete speculation right there. I mean, the reality right now is Big E and Sami Zayn are in a feud, and it's going well. I'm looking forward to seeing more of it.
Yeah, I mean, I have enjoyed Sami Zayn's act for quite a while at this juncture. And Big E really does seem to be growing into his own as his own person, while still, you know, obviously not completely forgetting about the other parts of New Day, but they've given him plenty of mic time, and they should. You know, he is quite entertaining just in and of himself. And they've made him look pretty strong recently, and this match also helped him look strong. Man, also did the accomplishment of Sami Zayn has really figured out a new way to be a chicken shit heel, and I have enjoyed his many ways to circumvent the rules and win matches without outright cheating. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's another good one. We still got more and more of, you know, Roman Reigns and Kevin Owens going on, which is it a full-on TLC match, I assume?
Yes, it is, yes.
So, yeah, I don't know that there's much to say about that storyline just because they just continued it. And, I mean, it's doing great, but, you know, there wasn't really any new developments this week, in my opinion.
I mean, nothing new, per se, but, once again, it was continuing to build it up and really, really, really pounding home, you know, about, you know, once again, who this heel Roman Reigns is, as well as, you know, what Kevin Owens stands for, and, you know, Roman was definitely, you know, at his most evil when he was beating down Kevin Owens backstage, and, you know, they definitely got a situation here, and it's what wrestling is supposed to be about, where you want to believe that Kevin Owens can beat Roman Reigns. When Kevin Owens is climbing that ladder, you can shut off that part of your brain that says, "Oh, come on, no way he's going to win this," and really root for him. And that's the kind of babyface Kevin Owens is, as this kind of blue collar working man's babyface. You know, sometime a cross between Steve Austin and Dusty Rhodes. You know that he can play that very well. Yeah, so it's a really good storyline. You know, Kevin Owens is the ideal, you know, hate to say it like this, but B-show challenger for Roman Reigns. Which, you know, I'm glad this match is on this show. I mean, I was reminded earlier today of the absolute disaster that was last year's TLC. Horrible build-up, neither world championship defended, that disaster of a TLC match where Kairi Sane almost died in the main event, and it's just like, it was just like, that was just a terrible show. But at least this time, they're at least putting their best foot forward that, you know, they have available for a show like this, you know, to cap off the year, and, you know, before we get into Royal Rumble WrestleMania season. So I like that, at least.
Yeah, things could definitely be worse heading, considering where things had been. Things have, at least on the smack of downs, headed in a better direction. I'm not sure that I'm confused sometimes by the women's tag team division. Whether it matters why Billie Kay is automatically put in a tag team situation after you broke up another tag team for no reason, kind of like the Riot Squad, who is now back together. And I enjoy, but since the women's tag team titles are being held hostage.
Good work. That's exactly what I was thinking.
By Shayna Baszler and Nia Jax. Like, I guess I don't have a whole lot of hope for the women's tag team titles in general, but you could still have a good, at least a nice undercard match with that title at all times, with their roster and floating between the brands.
Yeah,
but
that's, it doesn't, none of what they've done really with it really makes sense. You know, it feels like it's been tied up with the, with a, at least one or both of the main main singles women's championships for a huge chunk of its existence.
Oh.
I mean, the stuff with Sasha and Bayley over the summer with Asuka obviously was some of the, was really the highlight of the summer. So I guess I wouldn't trade that back. But what's happened since then with Nia and Shayna and you know, and now and then mixing it up with Asuka, it's hurt everybody. You know, the women's tag team championships were supposed to give the other women in the company something to fight for. And that's not what's happening.
The one thing that it, I guess I just feel like it would give some of the women more of a chance to show off their skill set if they actually followed through on this. Just because it would give them some in-ring time. It probably wouldn't be, a ton, but it would give some people who are sitting on the sideline. Like, I mean, Billy Kay is largely unused. Like, why are you paying someone to be unused? Like, that part always confuses me just in general with their booking. It's just, you have people there, use them, maybe something will happen. Maybe you'll get a good spark. Who knows? I guess staying in the tag team ranks, are you as confused by the Otis and Chad Gable pairing as I am?
I don't want to say confused. What's got you so confused?
Why they're doing it. Like, because it already seems obvious that, like, Chad Gable is kind of playing the bad guy in this situation. Like, they were almost teasing a breakup already. And this whole gimmick's, like, two shows old?
Yeah. No. I see your point.
I think that's what bothered me the most. Like, I'm like, hold on. Like, Gable tagged himself in during his big spot. Like, and you can't view that as anything but a dick move. You know, especially if you're just helping to focus the guy. So, like, he came in and did what you wanted. Like, shouldn't you be rewarded for that? So, yeah, like, it's weird to me if you're going to tease dissension right off the bat. Yeah, I don't get it. You know, Otis might be gullible, but I don't feel like he's dumb. And they play him like he's dumb, and that kind of bothers me sometimes, too.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's supposed to be, he says he's supposed to be naive, he's supposed to be simple, but I guess you cross that line into him being an absolute dummy. That's, you know, because he just had his best friend stab him in the back. It literally just happened.
Oh.
And now he's...
Yes, that is a point that I didn't think about, but that is a good one.
Yeah, so now he's being used by Chad Gable. You know, if Gable's going to put together a group of shooters as his varsity club, and, you know, with Otis playing the role of Rick Steiner, the simpleton being used by the evil games master, you could do something with that, but Otis has to buy into it, but Chad Gable can't be just outright lying to Otis's face while Otis just, okay. Not just that.
Yeah.
Otis has any doubt in Chad Gable's words. That's not how you do this. You know, it's like, why would you listen to Chad Gable? He never wins anything.
So I do think that there are a lot of ways that this can work out for everyone involved, but I think you need a little more of that buy-in at the front end before you have a breakup and he realizes that he's just being used.
Gable's still, you're right. Gable's not playing this like a charismatic cult leader. He's just a buffoonish, life coach.
And that I guess that's the other thing that was kind of weird to me, and you kind of nailed it. Like, I guess I didn't feel like in those segments that that they showed on the on SmackDown that they didn't do anything to go, oh yeah, like he's really evil. Like, it was just kind of fun, nonsensical training methods. I felt like it was just supposed to be fun and they were going to be a fun tag team. And then to have Gable do that, it was just, to me, a little bit of a head scratcher. Like, and I guess that's maybe the big thing. Like, which way are you going with this? Is he evil or is he just a buffoon? Like, you definitely went more evil with him tagging in during the worm, during a signature move.
It's a caterpillar, Kevin. Get it right.
Oh. That is a distinction that I probably should have remembered at this point, but do not. Yeah, there really wasn't too much else on SmackDown to look at. So I guess, unfortunately, that leads us to Raw. And we already broached the subject with the Women's Tag Team Championship, so I feel like I may as well start there as much as anywhere else. I'm completely confused with what they are doing with Lana.
They're doing what I thought they were going to do before Survivor Series. Just take her out of the match entirely. But we've gone through all this. Well, really, after she beats Nia Jax, there's nowhere else really for the story to go.
that is true. But, well, yeah, she can't win it anyway but fluky, but that was even more fluky than fluky. When you have that type of pinning predicament be the finish, it's gone a little too comedy for me.
That's your line, a little too comedy for this whole Lana mess. Some people have enjoyed it more than I have, I guess. I've never been really into the whole thing of pushing Lana, and I definitely have not been a fan of intermingling Asuka with it. Nor am I really a fan of Shayna and Nia, being tag team champions.
Yeah.
Where are we going? I mean, now that Lana's taken out of action, Asuka's going to need a mystery partner. Let's just say, for speculation's sake, Asuka's mystery partner ends up being the returning Charlotte Flair. What do you do? Okay, the super team of Asuka and Charlotte beats Nia and Shayna. This is the only team that would even believably be able to beat Nia and Shayna. Then You have the question. Then you have two problems. Number one, who can beat Asuka and Charlotte together? And two, then what the heck do you do with Asuka being women's champion and tag team champion at the same time when we just did this shit over the summer?
Yeah. That when I saw a headline pop up on my feed about Charlotte being the mystery person for Asuka, I'm like, that's a terrible idea. Like,
I mean, it
like
both
you said,
makes sense, and it's a terrible idea. It's like, yeah, the last time we saw Charlotte, you know, Nia injured her, and so Charlotte's gonna come back for revenge. It gives Scarlett an excuse to come back as a babyface, even though she's not a very good one.
And Asuka and her had kind of buried the hatchet on their feud. I feel like the last time we saw them in the ring together. So,
yeah.
It would make sense if Asuka called on her to be her tag team partner. Like, it wouldn't be completely out of the blue.
I mean, and then if that's the team, if that's the match, they really can't lose. So they have to win. But then it becomes a matter of then what. And, of course, during the kind of sloppy, you know, exit of Charlotte out of the storylines for nearly 6 months, they did have a match where Asuka did beat Charlotte. In the 10 o'clock hour on an episode of Raw. So that is no longer a story that they can build to. Asuka versus Charlotte with Asuka finally getting the monkey off of her back. They've done it. They just threw it away. They threw that moment away. So where we go with Asuka and Charlotte, interactions.
Yeah.
They threw the moment away already.
I mean, I guess you've had enough time in between that you could run it back if you wanted to.
You can, but the element of Asuka never beating Charlotte is gone.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, you've definitely got to find new territory for that story if that's the way you're going to go. But yeah, I mean, I guess kind of just even getting in that deep into the speculation about Charlotte being the mystery partner is.
I mean, imagine it would be her or I guess Naomi possibly, but the only other person who's assigned to the Raw brand who hasn't been around in a while. Other than that, there's no one who would even remotely, live up to any kind of expectations.
Yeah, and even that one, like, I guess you'd kind of expect Naomi and Asuka to win, or at least they'd have because she's been off TV for a little while too. Like, it'd seem a little lackluster if, because I still don't see Asuka taking the pin in that, with that match if Shayna and Nia end up retaining. So that'd be pretty awkward for Naomi to lose.
Unless I've got a really great idea coming out of it, this never should have happened. All the way back to Asuka, to Nia and Shayna winning the tag titles. None of this should have happened.
Yeah, like, I expected the dissension between Nia and Shayna to cost them at some point, but they've completely played off, they've always come together in enough time to win, and it's just like, yeah, it makes sense that they're being could be dominant, considering they're not defending the belts, they're not technically dominant champions. If they still had that fracture there, it'd be fine, but they kind of seem to be even getting along at this point, which, yeah, makes them nearly unbeatable. Like, if they went back to having some type of a schism, you'd see an opening there for someone to come in and win. But yeah, right now that is not there, and I don't want to see one of those other super teams, you know, no matter who it is, end up winning the championship. You know, whoever Asuka would end up being partners with. Trying to think of the other big things on Raw. I mean, I see AJ versus Sheamus. It was a very good match, but you know, that was what it was. Bray Wyatt and Randy Orton keep on going round and round. I guess that is kind of the big thing. Randy Orton burning someone in a box.
It's not the first time he's done it. It's not the first time he's played with wire. Not the first time he tried to kill someone. And when we just keep, just everyone just keeps letting them get away with it. Yeah. Nah, it's goofy. It's not unentertaining. It's fine since neither of them are in the title picture. You know, as I said, I'm okay with it. At this, you know, as the one part of the show where things get that kind of get kind of spooky, supernatural, it's fine, weird. It was. You take it. You take it. Ready when
Yeah,
please.
I just really don't have that much for that, honestly. You know, it's weird for Randy Orton to be doing that, but they definitely seem to have the fake crowd cheering for the Fiend. Like, they certainly want people cheering for the Fiend, but him still doing Fiendy type stuff is just kind of a weird spot for him to be in. It is a de facto baby face in this situation. It's kind of awkward, but I guess I kind of knew that whole thing was going to be awkward anyway. Because it's heel on heel and two guys that really don't care, and they have really have done. It keeps on cracking me up every time the announcers are like, "Oh, this feud's on a whole new level." I'm like, Randy Orton burnt down a house. Like, I guess burning someone in a box is really the only thing more extreme. But oh man, you know, yeah, it's kind of weird. Like, I guess that's one of those ones where I'm like, considering the era, it just maybe that's more what it is. Like, considering the era, it just seems out of place. Just because of the extremity of the possible violence. Now, this is a good one. Like, I had completely forgotten about this, but I do believe this became a topic du jour after the last podcast I recorded with Jeremy, which was Keith Lee being sent to the performance center to do more big man stuff, as taught by Drew Gulak.
That's such an oxymoron of a statement. I'm like, yeah, I forget get if people keep bringing up, you know, like forget about to teach someone how to be a big man. Get Undertaker in there. Get Kevin Nash in there. Maybe that's coming. But you know what? There was a lot to do about that, and you know what? I'm especially after that match on Monday with Miz and Morrison. Keith Lee does too much shit. He tries to pack way too much of his athletic stuff into meaningless matches on Raw. He does do that. You know, and you know, I was not a big fan of his matches, like say with Dijakovic, his big man cruiserweight matches and stuff like that. And it was basically became a meme that kick, that block, and then spin kick he did was looked absolutely atrocious. It didn't really connect. It was just.
And that was one that I really like. I don't remember, and maybe it's just me, like, he doesn't do that in every match, does he? Like, I felt like he...
I don't know if he's... Yeah, it seems like something he just did on the fly in that match particularly. I don't think I've seen him do anything really like that, but...
Yeah, that's why I was like... Because when I... Honestly, when I saw that news on... I feel like I saw it on Friday. I was just like, huh. Like, I guess because he'd been wrestling Braun Strowman and people like that, I didn't feel like he had been doing too much of the, you know, quote-unquote cruiserweight stuff. So that's why it did kind of strike me as, you know, like, I felt like he had been, you know, doing, you know, body block, or, you know, like, the hard shoulder down he always kind of uses.
Yeah.
The, you know, he had been concentrating on the spirit bomb, which is good, because the jackhammer really wasn't working for him. And I guess I felt like his offense in general had less cruiserweight stuff, and then I saw this week's match, and I'm like, hold on, are they trying to get him to do more cruiserweight stuff? I was like, did the message get completely mixed up here?
Yeah, you know what, you kind of got a point there. It's like, it was a, yeah, like I said, that entire match was a mess. I mean, Miz and Morrison weren't, their timing was probably worse than Keith Lee's throughout that match. It was definitely, it was a rough outing for everyone.
Yeah, it was not good. Like, I guess I, and the other thing that always bugs me about a headline about that is, I mean, I know we make the jokes about Vince McMahon not watching NXT, but it's one of those things that's just like, if you don't like a guy's wrestling style, maybe you should have paid attention to it sooner.
Yeah, no, you're not wrong. That's very true.
I mean, I have no problem with going, hey, Keith, while you're down there in NXT, we want you to just be, you know, kind of stop doing the flippy stuff. Like, it's cool that you can do that, but let's really limit that. And like, yeah. I said, I guess I felt like in general on the main roster, he has limited it, and mainly because of the opponents that he's had. Like, you're not going to be doing a spinning kick against Braun Strowman.
Right, yeah.
I mean, it looked awkward enough against John Morrison. It would look even more out of place against Braun.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm definitely not going to be on the WWE evil, WWE's evil side of things, you know.
Oh.
Because, once again, you know, just because you made it to the main roster doesn't mean that you stop, you know, you don't stop working to improve, and you know that there isn't something to learn from these other veterans and Vince himself, and that, you know, less is more is traditionally proves itself to be correct. I mean, pretty much the thing that Keith Lee has done that got the biggest reaction from the most amount of people was when he shoulder blocked Brock Lesnar down.
Oh.
So yeah, I mean, he did some really great impactful power stuff. I mean, that clip of him, you know, pouncing Adam Cole and into the third row is basically become a meme that, you know, mainstream, you know, sports, you know, sites and Twitter accounts use. So yeah, that kind of stuff, definitely do more of that, and you know, save the flippy stuff for when it counts.
Well, yeah, I guess that is the other thing with him. Like, I would be shocked if he doesn't have some big, you know, big matches in the future. And that's the time to maybe pull out something something extra special to show off your athleticism. But until then, like, if he does cut down on the spin kicks, I would 100% be there. Like, if those are completely out of the arsenal, zero arguments from this guy.
I hope he gets some big matches. Him losing that match was, I don't want to say a heartbreaker, but it was just like, well, there's no point to matches like that. Either the tag team get the tag team loses to one guy, or someone you're supposed to be pushing, you know, loses to the tag team. Someone made the point. They've been doing these types of matches for a very long time. You know, they would do the, you know, dating back to the Attitude Era, you know, Edge and Christian would lose handicap matches to the Undertaker while they were tag team champions and, you know, stuff like that. You know, it was never good then. And you just don't book the match in the first place. There's no good can come from it.
Yeah, and as you noted, no good came from that match at all. Do you think there is any good to come from Jackson Ryker teaming up with Elias?
Oh my God, no! Nothing good can come of Jackson Ryker's continued employment. My God, why? Just why? Why are you doing this to Elias? It's like when he first came back and he did that concert, that live concert on Raw, and he was actually really good, and you know. They're trying to sell an album, and then he got bogged down in the Jeff Hardy feud, and they, you know, kept him a heel. And now this, Elias is just a guy who just cannot catch a break. He's not injured. It's bad creative, and now he's being saddled with this dirtbag. It's like there's nothing to Ryker. I don't, you know, okay, take his politics and his, you know, what have you. Out of the equation. Gunner was a thing in TNA when Hogan and Bischoff were there. Over 10 years ago.
Good Lord, has he been trying
to make him a star for what?
Has he been around for that long?
Yeah, he was one of the security guys, and then eventually started wrestling.
Oh my gosh!
Someone trying to make a thing out of him for that long.
Wow, man.
There's nothing there. There's just nothing there. I mean, he's got a decent physique, but plenty of people have a better one. He's tall, but plenty of people are taller. He's not a promo. So it's like, what does he bring to the table? Why? And if he's going to be a source of bad publicity and disharmony in the locker room, why keep him around? It's in the Velveteen Dream principle. Like, why? Actually, no, it's not even that, because Velveteen Dream showed a lot of promise before everything fell apart.
Yeah. I mean,
no, I don't even know what this is. It's just like, it's just this useless. It's Lars Sullivan. It's just this useless, worthless person that you just continue to keep around. And speaking of which, well, Lars Sullivan hasn't been around, thankfully.
I didn't even. Until you said his name, I'm like. Oh, like, because they made a big deal out of him during the draft, and, like, that whole thing has just gone away.
It has. He did that weird shirtless promo where he talked about his bullies, which...
Oh.
The hell wants to hear? A number of going on all, WWE television, which is, you know, what? You released. We made the point before when all this, a lot of this stuff came out. It's like you released a bunch of people to save money who did nothing wrong. Why are you keeping these people around? They bring nothing to the table.
Oh, yeah. I'm not sure. It's one of those ones that, because Retribution is not doing any better. Ricochet is not doing any better. Like, I think that's almost the weirdest thing at this point, is how much TV time people are getting that just are not being well written at any level. Like, that match didn't do anything for Ricochet, it didn't do anything for Mace, and Mace was another one. Like, I haven't seen that guy in the ring enough to know if he needed to go down for big man training.
I would have Yeah, I would imagine. I would hope that he would be him. You know, and then if you're sending Keith Lee, then Dijakovic or T-Bar should go too. you know, it's I don't so much television devoted to Retribution for it to end up like this. I am absolutely gobsmacked at this entire run. It really is just it's head shaking.
Yeah.
Why would they want Ricochet? He never wins either. And why would Ricochet want to be with them? They're losers too.
Yeah, at least if he had gone to the Hurt Business, at least the Hurt Business wins.
Yeah.
Good gravy.
What is the point of any of that? The whole Retribution thing absolutely sucks. Yeah.
Yeah. Good gravy. And I don't know. Is there much to be said about the AJ Styles stuff that kind of ran throughout the night with The Miz?
No, this is the inverse of the whole Kevin Owens, Roman Reigns, you know, angle. That's, you know, that's really working on all cylinders, and is, you know, this just reeks of, we've got this gimmick pay-per-view, so it has to be a TLC match, even though these two have never interacted before. There's no real, you know, there's no real animosity between the two. You know, AJ's just that guy. You can plug into the main event of any B pay-per-view just to get a challenger.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it just doesn't have any of the same intensity of what they've done in a, you know, similar short period of time with Roman Reigns and Kevin Owens. That's why I call it the inverse. It's just like this. It just doesn't feel like, you know, it feels like, you know, we've got this gimmick pay-per-view. It comes up every year. There's no reason for this to be a TLC match, but it has to be a TLC match.
Yeah, that, I mean, them shoehorning the title matches to be the TLC matches, like, if you had feuds that were more hot, you should really roll with them instead of forcing it into the main event ones. I mean, the main events could be unique without having those stipulations.
Yeah, I mean, Dan, I feel like because they've really been able to do a great job with the intensity of Reigns and Owens, that it works more for, it certainly works more for them than it does Styles and McIntyre, which just, you know, it's just a match to get through the end of the year. I mean, there's no feeling that AJ could possibly win this match.
Oh, no.
It's not, you know, there's really no intrigue with Miz and the Money in the Bank, because Miz keeps losing, and, you know, they're being played for comedy. So, yeah, it's what it is. I'm sure a match between Drew McIntyre and AJ Styles is going to be very good. But it also might be a match that would actually be better without all the gimmicks.
Oh.
At the same time.
Yeah.
What you were saying.
Yeah, it would be it would be an interesting clash of styles. Yeah, you can't really avoid saying that. I was like, is there a good way to, like, say that but in different words? And I'm like, no, not really. But yeah, they have a nice. It would be an interesting matchup in the ring. If it were a conventional one. And I guess that's why I was thinking, I'm like, you know, there is so much of that going on at TLC. Having the main event not have any of that stuff might be refreshing for a change. But it always feels like you need to change or end on a TLC match, or else you're not allowed to have TLC. So,
yeah,
you know, it kind of is what it is, I suppose. Although that match is completely not closing TLC.
No, absolutely.
Anything else to ramble over about the main two shows?
No, I think we're pretty good there.
Okie dokie. Well, I have finally picked up some new beers for myself. some of it was for the glorious, glorious win by the Columbus Crew, 3-0 in the MLS Cup Championship. So I was going to get some land grant glory because they have teamed up for that. But I also got the beer that I had this evening. It's their experimental series, Southern Hemisphere Pale Ale. They're using all hops from the New Zealand area. And Waimea, Wakatu, and Rakau hops. So I was pretty interested because I know that one of the breweries that I enjoy quite a bit, Roundabout Brewing in Pittsburgh, uses a lot of the New Zealand hops for their beers because the one owner's wife is from that area of the world. So I was pretty interested to see how this one tasted in comparison to some of their beers, and I do like it quite a bit. It has a different palate than it's not floral like I typically like. But it does kind of have a nice vibrancy to it. And they're not very piney, which is always a big thumbs up from yours truly. So, yeah, I think Land Grant is distributing Ohio-wide if you happen to be in that listening range. So, yeah, Bill Time Beer of the Show. I will close out by saying I'm at DeFrango11, and that is at Stunt Cali. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you happen to listen to us, and have a good night.
Later.